just a few words of encouragement for you believers. I'm reading from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. And the reason that I'm reading, and I want you to get your Bibles and turn to that and be ready to read along with me. The reason that I'm reading from it is because I was challenged last night. I won't tell you where I was, but I was at a place and two people told me that the way that you were raised and the things that you believe in are gone, never to return again. I was talking with one gentleman and two ladies after I had had dinner. As strangers, totally. They invited me to sit at their table because the guests that I was there with had to leave. And so instead of me going home, I wanted to stay out and listen to some music. And I began to talk about my life. And the man told me, I understand where you are, but you have to change. You have to come to change. You have to come to change in your mind. And he was telling me that the ideas that I had, that I was raised under, those ideas that had formed me and shaped me and developed me and conditioned me and controlled me and gave me a purpose, were fallacious. And this is Saturday that I'm making this webcast. It's in the afternoon. I have tons of papers to grade, formats that I have to work on for college, a sermon that I have to prepare for tomorrow. And I thought that I'd read these scriptures to you and give you my view on what the young people told me. It was interesting because the man was born in the year that I graduated from high school. And he said, "My God, you're old enough to be my father." I said, "Yeah." And then he told me, "But the way it was back in your day, that is gone, never to come back again." Really blew my mind because they were speaking with such confidence. And the lady that was next to me, she said, "Get rid of those ideas and things that you had, because that is never to return again." That is the terms that they were using. Well, I'd like to read something from you from this text in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 1. And I think that it should encourage you as it is encouraging me. Paul is a writer, and he writes to the church, which is at Corinth. This is his second epistle to those believers in Corinth. And he says, "For we know that if our earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down." What he means by that, he says, "For we know that when our body decays and dies," Paul says, "we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens." Let me share verse 1 with you. That will never pass away. That will never change. I listened to these people, and you know, the argument sounded enticing. I wanted to get carried away. As a matter of fact, the brother liked me so much, he was saying, "You know what, I'm going down to San Diego next weekend," because he was a tailor. And he says that he made these suits for this OG singing group. And he was going to go down to San Diego and see them do a premiere show. And he just wanted me to be a guest and to ride down there with him. And I didn't have anything too important planned, but I know that I couldn't do that because I didn't like their idea about change, because that's saying that everything that I believed in, everything that I had learned to trust in, everything that is a part of me is no more. Let me read the verse again. "For we know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens." Now, verse 2, Paul takes it a step further. He says, "For indeed in this house," in other words, in our bodies, where we live with all of our ideas, with all of our intentions, with everything. He says, we groan, longing to be closed with our dwelling from heaven. In other words, we want to be away from here. We want to be away from the pain, the death, the anguish, the anxiety, the joblessness, the homelessness, the lovelessness, all of that stuff. We groan. We long to be clothed with our building from heaven. We want to be where God had promised us. These people were telling me that all that's changed. It's gone. That old world, they said, is no longer here. They were telling me that we are free to do whatever we want to do with whomever we want to do it with and however we want to do it, and that we should open ourselves up to that particular freedom and to allow that to take place in us. That's what they were trying to tell me. Now, verse 3 says, inasmuch as we, having put it on, will not be found naked. In other words, the Apostle Paul says, since you have been clothed with something to keep you safe while you're living on this beautiful ball, this planet called Earth, in this here 21st century where everything is crazy, where we've seemed to have lost contact with our children, lost contact with reality, lost contact with our world. He says in verse 4, for indeed, while we are in this tent, this is what he fashions the human body as, we groan being burdened, because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed, so that what is mortal will be swallowed up by life. You see, this mortality that we have, we want that to be swallowed up by real life, which is coming. No one can convince me that that's not going to take place in my life. That is impossible, improbable, totally insane. But it was interesting to listen to these people talk to me about something that would never happen in my conscious lifetime. Now, let me continue to go on. Verse 5 says, now he who prepared us for this very purpose is God. Listen to me, believers. God is the one that has prepared us for this wonderful, wonderful new clothing upon that he is going to clothe us with. That will never change. God's words are eternal. They will last forever. They will never perish. They will never dissipate. They will never lessen in its quality and tranquility. We know this because we have been clothed upon. Oh, listen. Now, verse 6 says, therefore, being always of good courage and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. I love verse 6 because verse 6 really communicates the simplicity of our faith when it is lived out. Therefore, being always of good courage, I am not discouraged because I had the conversation with this man and his cousins. I'm not, because they were his cousins. I'm not discouraged when one of his female cousins was liking me and told me, if you want to get in touch with me, call my cousin here and get my number from him. I didn't want to do that. That's not why I was there. I wasn't there to pick up on a new date. I was just there sharing some humanality. And out of that humanality came the challenge for me to change. See, I think the people have taken this Barack Obama quote, change for the sake of change, without thinking it through. But no, I told the lady, you don't know who you're speaking with. I could never do that. I could never give up my traditions of who I am, because you're giving me some kind of a promissory note that lets me think that I can have a life full of pleasure without any kind of responsibility. I think that's what I was being told. And if you know PJ, now, listen, when it says, therefore, always being of good courage and knowing that while we are at home in the body, in other words, we are living in this human body and we don't have a problem with it, with this pain, with this anxieties, with its temptations, with its obligations. We're at home here. But look what he says in verse 7, he says, "For we walk by faith." Now, what he means by that is that our living principles, in other words, the thing that governs us as believers, is a faith walk. This, and I don't mean this word faith crap, like Fred Price and the rest of those word faith E.W. Kenyon followers believe in. I don't mean some science of mind, speak the word and it happens. That kind of faulty mysticism is what has screwed up religion for generations after generations. Folk thinking mansions, Cadillac, big houses, and think, well, that to me is African-American essence of their religion. Think big and grow rich. No. Get off your butt, get a job, and start digging a ditch, and you may have a shelter over your head. That's the way it's done in the real world that I live in. So when it says that we walk by faith, it does not mean the way Fred Price defines that walking by faith, the faith walk. In other words, if you walk believing that you get a lollipop, that in time you will get a candy house. No. Not by sight. That's what the latter part of verse 7 says. In other words, it says our faith in God and what God has said is what motivates us, what drives us, not by what we see materialistically in front of us, not by the house deed with our name on it, not by the Bentley with our keys in it, not by the 600 square foot swimming pool with our name carved in the concrete. None of that. That's sight. That's material. That's not what I live by. Hopefully that's not what you live by. Now look what he says in verse 8. "We are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord." Now, see, that's where we are. Because I was sitting in that place of food and music and entertainment, just relaxing, enjoying a little blues music, and looking at the smiling faces, people sitting around, trying to be happy, satisfied with what little of life they have. I'm just sitting there, enjoying myself, enjoying sitting across the table from three of the most beautiful African-American people in my community. Had a little money. They offered me to eat off of their platter of chicken. I said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm pretty full. I just ate another platter with some other friends of mine." And they welcomed me to stay. And that's when the conversation developed. No, I didn't start sharing with them that I was a believer. I wanted to hear their whole treatise. I wanted to hear premise one, premise two, and whether it made a conclusion. Premise one was, we're happy, having a good time because we're free. We've accepted change. Premise two, since you're sitting with us and we know what you need, all you need to do is release yourself. Conclusion, I should release myself and be free. And I could have gone home with the lady that was really liking me. Or she could have come home with me. No, didn't work in my scenario. Because this verse says, I would prefer rather to be absent from this body. In other words, dead. And to be at home with my Lord. That's what makes me a believer. Therefore, Paul says in verse 9, we also have as our ambition, whether at home, in other words, or absent, in other words, whether I am here in this body or whether I am dead. Listen what he says, to be pleasing to him. You see, my friends, to be pleasing to God is the main key for the believer. They have to please God. It's not about change. It's not about them having it the way they want it. It's not about having their life go that way. It is about being pleasing to him. Now look what he says in verse 10. Paul says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. See, this is me and the three people sitting around the table. But they said that all that is old. That's all gone. All those, you know, they were telling me all those moral ideas that we had, that we were raised under, that we're not supposed to do this and not supposed to do that. They said, this is a new day. It is here. And these people were at the table telling me blatantly, right up front, this is who we are. And you need to come. And, you know, and they kept advising me during the evening. Come on, man. I see it in your face. I guess I was looking too melancholy. You know, I was looking like I was. See, if you're a true believer in God, you are disconnected from this world. You are totally disconnected from this world. You know what Jesus said? He said, we are in the world, but not of it. I don't mind going to places like that because it doesn't grieve my spirit. When I want to hear some good music, I go where the good music is played. I was looking this morning earlier at television, and when you go to the lesser channels and you see Armenian television, Vietnamese television, Korean television, and all these kinds of cultures and Indian television and the singing and all of that. And then when I compare that to the African-American culture, I don't think that there's any comparison. I think we have some of the best music. We are one of the most liveliest people on the planet. And at the same time, I believe that we are one of the most people on the planet that are so separated from God by our lifestyles, because we don't believe, most of us don't believe, that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one of us may be recompensed for the deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. So I like to end up this short cast on a Saturday and ask you, what did you hear last night? And if you heard something that prompted you to be or to do something that God would not want you to be or to do, why did you do it? I'll tell you why most of us do it. I'll tell you why I do it sometimes. I get lonely. I get very, very, very lonely. You know, Pastor John is going to be very truthful with you. I don't know how to be anything but truthful. I don't know how to give you a line if you give me a dime. I don't know how to do that. The only thing that I can say is not to be careful, but say as Paul said. He said in verse 8, we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. So I would tell my friends, if I wanted to be antagonistic and mess up their evening, you could keep your change. I'm going to hold to my old ideas and just sit here alone and enjoy the music. But I could not enjoy the music without participating as a participant in the black culture that I love so much. My community. My people. And what these people shared with me was a terrible tragedy, that the things that once hold us in check are now gone, and that the majority of the people in our culture not only knows that they are gone, but that they are telling their children that they are gone. Can you imagine what the poor children will be in light of this newfound knowledge? No God, no morality, no right or wrong. Go with the flow. Go with the tide. Use your pragmatic, whatever it takes. Don't worry. Just be happy. This is utility at the highest note. There's no moral relevancy. No more in this culture can someone say that this is wrong or this is evil. Well, as a believer in God, I can only speak for myself. If he kills me, I will trust him. Now, I just saw a scene walk by the window of the Lucy Coleman studio. And if I did not have a check in my soul, I would have thought something that was terrible. And I thank God, I thank him from the depths of my heart that I know what is right and I know what is wrong, and I am going to do what is right if it kills me, because I want to see his face one day and I want to hear his voice say to me, "Well done, you, John, my good," and not based upon the goodness of men, "my faithful," not based upon a word, faith, heretic, joke, "servant," because I am a slave to God, Jehovah Elohim Almighty. Never a slave of my own making. God bless you. Thank you for coming to our website. And whatever you do, stay in the Word.